DEI. No doubt you've heard those three letters, but do you know what they actually mean? Well, first, directly, they stand for diversity, equity, inclusion. Meaning beyond that foundation, that kind of depends on who you're listening to or talking with. Well, some say it's a policy that's focused on fairness and opportunity. Others dismiss it as biased and woke, whatever that happens to mean this week. Businesses of all sizes have embraced DEI, as have local, state, and federal government. But the division over the concept has caused many in all those areas to just flat out abandon it. My first guest today is here to share the facts about DEI, the harm caused by a lack of understanding about it, along with the productive ways it can be and should be implemented. She is a workplace futurist, ESG expert who lectures at Harvard University on leadership. She is the founder of Future Forward Strategies and is the author of the soon-to-be-released book, The Win-Win Workplace, How Thriving Employees Drive Bottom-Line Results. Dr. Angela Jackson, thanks for being here today, Doctor.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Two websites, and we have them at our homepage, of course, drangelajackson.com. And learn more about Future Forward Strategies. You're assuming the obvious, you're correct, futureforwardstrategies.com. For a foundation for the listener right now, Dr. Jackson, I explained what the three letters DEI mean, diversity, equity, inclusion. But what are the policy priorities of programs, or at least what should they be? Because I can imagine, just like with any program, nothing is really textbook for every workplace, and there could be wrong ways to bring what you think is a legitimate DEI policy and program into a workplace.
So thank you again for having me. When we talk about DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, really what has been narrowed down is an acronym. And everyone, to your point, has an understanding of what that means and what it looks like. And when it's wielded without intention, it can be used for different things. It was never meant to be created to be about checkbox diversity and standards and metrics. It was never meant to be about we're just going to hire people of one race. And so what we've seen now is that this word is just so politicized. And what I try to do in my reading and my work with Future Forward Strategies is really thinking about how do we get to the true intent around DEI? And for me, as it relates to the workplace, it meant how do we create work environments where people can show up and they can thrive and conditions are met so that they can do their job. And for me, that's a win for the employee, but it's also a win for the organization and the business.
And for the business, too, I guess the initial repulsion of the introduction of the policy is not knowing that the policy is needed. So how does a business make everyone understand, well, we see not a problem, but an imbalance that we're trying to address here?
Yeah, and so what a lot of organizations that I work with are doing is they're doing a lot of employee listening. And some are doing it better than others. And from this listening, issues are surfaced. Now, I just want to give you a very concrete example. There's research out there that says that 63% of white men are covering some part of their identity in the workplace. And people would say, okay, why is that a problem? That's a problem, and we saw this with the pandemic, because when people have things going on at home that impacts their ability to show up fully in the workplace, it's not only that employee's problem, but it's a corporation's problem, because we're losing mind share of people when they're working. And so what happens when a company is doing this well is that they're listening to all of their employees and they're understanding what is going on in the workplace, also what's going on outside of the workplace, that if a company, being a business, can better attune to, that they could help in that regard. And so I say that, and I mentioned, you know, 63% of white men, because, again, we've reduced this idea about inclusion and centering what's important to workers to a matter around race. And what I say to your listeners is we all have things that are going on outside of work and in work that if we can attune to them, we can better engage in our work. So great employers are first listening, and then they're coming up with what are the strategies that we can implement to help people where they need it the most. And I'll give you an example. There's a corporation called Guild Education, and if you look at them, they're based in Denver. During the pandemic, one insight they had from their listening is that people were really worried about their child care. This was men and women during the pandemic, and a lot of them felt like they were going to have to leave their workplace. It was either going to be the mom or the dad, so someone could attune to the child care because schools were closing, they were inconsistent. And so what this organization was able to do was to build on-site child care. And so when we think about inclusion in that kind of example, it's saying we're listening to parents who have a real need, and we want them to be able to show up, and we don't want our A players to leave because they don't have child care. And so this is something that, as a business, the CEO chose to do and build in their business model. So when inclusion is done right, what I want to leave your listeners with is we're actually thinking about how do we meet the needs of employees so they can show up fully and do their job.
And it's certainly not, I mean, people want to focus on DEI for the superficial, the skin color, the racial background, any point in between. But with diversity and inclusion, it also brings in people of different cultures, people of different experiences, people with a root within themselves that could bring about different ideas that without the diversity, without the inclusion, the path becomes more narrow for any business to move forward.
That's exactly it. And I think about an example of Home Depot. When you go into Home Depot, if you look at their signage, they have their signage now in Spanish and they have it in English. Why is that? Because they're a business, and a business thinks about their customers. They're not looking at race. They're not looking at gender. They're trying to think about how do we sell our products and services to as many people as possible, and what are the ways that we can do with our marketing and our business to reach those customers? Sometimes the best way to do that is to have people inside your organization reflect the backgrounds, the sentiments, the understanding and lived experience of your customers. Because if you don't have that, you might be missing an opportunity. And there's famous examples of that, of companies who have not, you know, wanted to do, let's say, signage or promotions in a particular language or culture, but they didn't have a native speaker or someone from that culture, and things were lost in translation. So again, it's not just about bringing on somebody because they might identify as Latinx or Latino or Black. It's actually bringing on someone who's, one, first and foremost, very good at their job, but you're getting an extra added value because they might have insights into a community that's your customer that they can leverage, right, their lived experience to actually market to those customers in a better way and to bring them in.
So with Dr. Angela Jackson, founder of Future Forward Strategies, author of the soon-to-be-released book, The Win-Win Workplace, How Thriving Employees Drive Bottom-Line Results, drangelajackson.com, where you can get a pre-order special for The Win-Win Workplace, and futureforwardstrategies.com, the respective websites. You are listening to Issues and Ideas. And off of what you just said, Doctor, the odd thing is, if you look at the companies who are abandoning DEI programs or policies, the vast majority of them are immediate customer relation, customer connection based, where that sort of runs counter. Or maybe that's a sign, too, that the voice of, I think, the minority is so overly loud in objection of DEI through lack of full, complete knowledge and respect of it, that these companies are making their, again, my opinion, wrong decisions to abandon the policy out of fear of losing customers.
Completely agree with you. You know, right now, when we think about workers and customers, they're like consumed with what their employer is doing or what their favorite brands stand for. And so what we're seeing in this moment is a very knee-jerk reaction. There's a set of companies out there that are doing a more moderated approach where, just as I started this conversation with you, they're moving away from DEI, the acronym, right? Because they know it's so politicized. They're still continuing what they did, the inclusion policies and practices, because it actually works. They're able to make sure that they have the right staff to meet their customers, to be best in class. And what I think we're risking with the companies that are being knee-jerk is that they are going to appear fickle in many ways. And what do they actually really stand for at the end of the day? So, you know, my caution to a lot of the corporations that we work with is, you know, have a moderate approach. You know, if these strategies have been working in inclusion and you're really doing it with the intent of saying, how do we create a place that, you know, people can show up, do their best work, leverage their lived experience, How do we make sure that we have a diverse pool of staff that mirrors the customers that we want to serve better and best? Those are going to be the ones that are best positioned. The ones that we're just doing it as a checkbox, we want to have a certain number of, you know, Black people, a certain number of people who, you know, identify as women, et cetera. You know, those companies weren't true to inclusion anyway, because this work really is deeper, and it's about having the right people doing the right work, being able to show up and serving our customers the best way.
I want to wrap up just for a few moments with your book, The Win-Win Workplace, How Thriving Employees Drive Bottom Line Success, which is going to be released in March. And again, if you go to Dr. Jackson's website, you can get a pre-order special. What was it that you were looking for to communicate? Because thriving employees, I had a conversation not too long ago with someone about the term is quiet quitting. They're unhappy, so an employee will come in, do the bare minimum just to justify their continued existence with the company, but they're unhappy. So how would an employer respond to that without giving way to that employee?
So the biggest thing is people are quiet quitting because they're being allowed to in many ways. We're not staying in contact with our employees and really deeply understanding their sentiment. And one thing that I wanted to accomplish with the Win-Win Workplace to say, and it's pillar one, is we need to listen to our employees, what matters most to them, and then we need to act on it. And by that, I mean, you're not going to do everything someone wants, but they need to understand that you're actively listening on a regular basis, not just once a year. And you're going back to them and saying, I heard you. These are things that we can do. These are things that we're not going to be able to do, at least right now, or maybe we won't be able to do them ever, and here's why they don't align with the strategy. This is how you engage people. But if people are allowed to quiet quit, they're not being heard, they don't feel like they have a voice, that's when they go off on their own, and really they have one foot out the door from there. And we don't want to lose our A players. We don't want to lose a B players. In a tight labor market, we really need to understand that our employees are on the front line. They're the brand ambassadors for us. They're writing on LinkedIn and Glassdoor. It's better that we hear it as hiring managers, as companies, than for them to go on a listserv or a LinkedIn and air us out for what they feel like their grievances are when they could have been addressed.
Dr. Jackson's book is really a fantastic guide for businesses of all sizes and shapes. And even if it's just a mom and pop have to get along too and be proactive in the business. You get ideas for leadership and direction, trying to overcome what's conventional thinking about benefits. And as Dr. Jackson referred to, you have your A players, your B players. So one of those B players might become one of your A players if you do everything right. They call it a talent bench, and having a deep one keeps you having to not go to LinkedIn or wherever you do your recruiting over and over and over again. It seems you can keep promoting from within and replenish a talent bench as you go forward. You'll find that more in the Win-Win Workplace. Again, if you go to drangelajackson.com, you can get a pre-order special and find out more about her work with Future Forward Strategies, futureforwardstrategies.com. Dr. Angela Jackson, thank you for bringing people a better, more factual-based understanding of what DEI is supposed to be about when it's done correctly, accurately, and fairly. And thank you for being here today.
Oh, and thank you for having me.